we called it Raising a Stink. We came up with a title. This was a joint project between Environmental Justice Australia and the Western Region Environment Centre, which is based in Werribee in Victoria. We really wanted to highlight one of the big issues for residents in the Werribee area is the local landfill and particularly smell. So that was one of the reasons for the title. But the other reason was that communities in the general Wyndham area, which is the sort of broader area around Werribee, have been fighting for years about various forms of pollution and how they've been disproportionately impacting on communities in the west. That's the other meaning of raising the stink, because they've been leaping up and down and trying to get these issues listened to by the EPA and government for, you know, decades. So we decided to document the community's experiences of what happened when they did actually try to complain and alert, particularly the EPA, to what was going on.
Yeah, and that area would be one of the, am I right in saying that would be one of the fastest growing areas in the country?
Yes, that's right. And, not only is it one of the fastest growing populations, but it's increasingly become, as part of government policy, one of the major areas for the dumping of municipal waste. So in the west and northwest of metropolitan Victoria, we've got three growing huge landfills now, as landfills are successively closed in other parts of the metropolitan area. So it's become an even bigger concern for local residents. So quite a lot of the report is actually talking about the issues when they've tried to raise concerns about pollution and the impact on community health from landfills, including hazardous waste landfills in places like Tullamarine near the airport, which after a lot of community opposition were closed a few years ago, that one was closed a few years ago, but there are still major health issues and pollution risks continuing from that landfill. So really what we wanted to do in the report was to highlight some of the problems that the communities had when they've tried to complain to the EPA and get the EPA to take action. And I guess it's underpinned by the fact that probably most people, when they hear the phrase Environment Protection Authority, focus on the word protection and imagine that the authority is actually a champion on behalf of community when it comes to protecting the environment. Community's experience in the West, at least, is that to date, the authority's really been more of a kind of mediator between industry and community. And unfortunately, industry has a lot more power and gets a lot more bites at the cherry when it comes to trying to sort out problems of toxic waste and so on.
Have you had a response then from the EPA?
Yes, we have. We're also hoping to meet with them soon. We've had, our understanding is that there's been mixed responses. The EPA was at great pains to correct what they regarded as some errors in our report, but there were also people at the EPA who I think quietly agreed with a lot of our criticisms. And the criticisms really relate to the fact that quite often there have been major enforcement issues where nothing's been done, whether that's been about dumping of asbestos or other failures by industry to comply with environmental laws. There's also a major ongoing problem with the amount of opportunity to participate that communities actually get in the decision-making process. So, for example, granting a works approval to a potential landfill operator or having their say about whether contaminated land is, you know, able to be cleaned up and used for housing, those kinds of issues, some of which have ended up being litigated in the Civil and Administrative Tribunal. But the problem is there as well. It's becoming increasingly difficult for communities to take legal cases about these matters because they cost so much and because, again, industry is able quite easily to afford senior barristers and so on, and you know, spend a long time litigating these things, whereas of course the community usually has to fundraise from a pretty low base of economics.
True to say at the moment that the law doesn't support the ordinary everyday person in these matters?
Yes, I think that's correct. And, you know, while we were, EJA and no communities in the West were very pleased to see the introduction of the second Environment Protection Bill last week, because that does beef up some very important aspects of the kind of champion role of the EPA. It also adds a new right for third parties.
So hang on there, just so we get everybody on board there. So you're saying the Victorian government, the Labor government, is last week put a proposal up to improve the environmental laws here in Victoria. Is that what's happening?
Yes, that's right. They've introduced a new version of the Environment Protection Act, which is something that many of us have been advocating for a long time. So we're very pleased about some of the changes, including more opportunities for community themselves to enforce pollution laws if the EPA can't or won't. So that's a good thing. But I guess, you know, what the report is also saying is that it's really crucial that the culture within the EPA also changes, so that there is actually the will within the organisation to be a champion for the environment. We really can't wait for those things. You know, pollution is becoming more and more of an issue, including in areas where people are particularly disadvantaged, and that for us is why we call ourselves Environmental Justice Australia, because it's really about social justice as well as the environment. It's about the fact that some communities who are already suffering various forms of inequality have to also take more than their share of the burden, and what's going on with Melbourne's waste is a particularly profound example of that. So, you know, what we need the government to do is work on developing a very strong environmental justice strategy that allows genuine equal participation between the community and industry on these issues, not the uneven playing field that currently exists.
But this seems to me to be like what they call a systemic error in our society, that we externalize. You know, the environment is something external. It's not put into the budgets. It's not put into, we don't pay for that we destroy something.
Yes, I completely agree. I mean, our view is that the environment should be treated like health and education, you know, that it's a public good. You know, the government should be subsidising environmental protection in a much bigger way than it currently does, so that we don't go for quick fixes like the China recycling option, which has now turned into a crisis, that we don't substitute shonky waste-to-energy incineration for actually dealing at source with the fact that we have so much plastic being produced unnecessarily and imported into Australia. You know, while you've got a neoliberal economic rationalist economy, the problem is the environment is seen as having to pay its own way, or worse, to be simply exploited as an economic resource. And while you've got that happening, you're not going to achieve environmental justice.
Yeah. Chris, you spoke earlier about the ordinary everyday person having no recourse through the law. Will this, do you see this new law changing that a bit or at all?
Yes, and that's, you know, partly why we really welcome it, that they have introduced something that we've been advocating for a long time, which is that individual members or community groups can seek, when they think that pollution is happening, they can actually seek their own answers through the courts rather than waiting for the EPA to take action. So there may be situations where the EPA is overcommitted or for some reason decides not to or is regarded as being too slow in taking action. So there's nothing to stop now an individual or a community group actually deciding that they are going to take it to the polluter themselves. So that is a big win. The issue is, however, that there are still a lot of aspects of the way in which environmental law is enforced where the community doesn't really get much of a look in it, whereas industry has a lot more right of reply, if you like, when yep. decisions are
made. We saw now on Monday in America, there was a judge who said, I'm not going to talk about fossil fuels in court. You know, there was some cities who were actually trying to get some oil companies taken to court for that they had been, you know, messing around with the climate, basically. Mm. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that because everyone has a stake in this. Yes. You know, we're all part of that crime.
Yes.
He said, basically. What's your take? Because as an individual, I really have that feeling. I think these people in government are climate criminals. And I want to take them to court, but I can't.
Yeah, I think, you know, the problem is, I think, you know, as I was saying before, I think the way that the environment is sort of conceived of, you know, in government and industry thinking is, you know, at worst a resource simply to be exploited and at best, you know, something that has to kind of, you know, so alternatives to waste, like recycling, for example, are sort of regarded as having to make a profit or otherwise, you know, they won't get up. Whereas if we genuinely cared about the fact that, you know, so many seabirds, for example, are now choking on plastic and dying, we would be subsidising alternatives to landfills at a much higher rate than we currently do. We'd be seeing it as a public good in the same way as we used to see health and education as a public good, but of course, unfortunately, they're also increasingly privatised.
All right. Thank you very much for sharing this. Any last sort of message that you want to give? We're looking for hope. You know, we hear all these negative messages.
Yes.
And what's your message?
Yeah, well, I guess two things. I mean, one is if people would like to read the report, which is actually quite entertaining in parts in terms of some of the mistakes that the EBA have made. They can find it on our website under community and then go to democratic rights because it's very much about people's right to participate. And I guess the other, you know, heartening thing about the report, it ends with a little story from activists about how they went to a public meeting that they'd organised thinking they wouldn't get many people. They got so many people that they couldn't find a park and they ended up getting a parking fine. So they framed their parking fine as a illustration of their success in mobilising the community. So I guess what I take heart from and what a lot of advocates in the West take heart from is the people who, you know, despite having difficult lives, having issues with health, taking a lot of time and energy and, you know, being quite tired, have actually managed over many years to keep not shutting up about these things, to keep working together and to keep trying to improve the environment for all of us.
That persistence is absolutely crucial.
Yeah.
To getting the changes that we need.
Definitely.
The Sustainable Hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong. The Sustainable Hour.